Hello and welcome to Leaning Into Light's featured interview for October 2019, The Power of Living in Village. This is one of our free monthly recordings to support you, our listeners, to lean into light. What does that mean, to lean into light? It means to recover from pain, from frustration, from anger, from any of the yucky feelings that just we don't want to stay in, going into joy, into peace of mind, into delight, into wonder and curiosity and feelings that feel better. So this is one of the gifts we give to support you, our listeners, to lean into light. Grab a pen, pause if you need to, take notes so that you can take anything that you hear today that resonates for you into your life. My name is Jessica Rios, and I'm the founder of Leaning Into Light, and I would like to welcome our special guest today for this conversation, Sarah Wells. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks, Jessica. It's great to be here with you.
So a little bit about you, Sarah. Sarah Wells is a mother and a business owner. She's a community organizer and a fierce advocate for social justice. Through Sarah's business, Sacred Beginnings, she has supported hundreds of families through the transformational process of birth and early parenting. Sarah is a gardener. Wow. I'll just say that. Wow. For their backyard. And believes growing our own food is a radical step toward a healthier planet and community. She lives with her husband and two children on their urban farm in Chico, California, just blocks from her extended family. It's a little bit on how we met. I mean, I'm going to say for that is, Sarah, you and I met in Chico, where we have both lived, or I had lived, and you still live for many years. I just want to share, you know, a feel for the call and kind of why I wanted to interview Sarah. Oh gosh, this could go so deep. I'm going to keep it succinct. So again, listeners, the call is, you know, the power of living in village. And Sarah, you live in a village way more than anyone I know. I don't want to draw comparisons because that doesn't feel helpful, but you really live village in a strong way. And listeners, some of you may know this, some of you may not. I went through, after I gave birth, I went through 13 months of postpartum depression. And all through that time, something fascinating was happening. It's almost like I could see something being written on my forehead. It was very, very strange. And as I moved through the months of depression, having this new baby with me, this word was sort of tattooing itself on my forehead invisibly. And the word was village. And I kept thinking and feeling, wow, if I just had more village, if I just had a girlfriend next door who would hold my baby with me so I could vacuum for an hour, or if I just had a girlfriend to drink tea with and to cry with, I don't think I'd be depressed. And it kept occurring to me that village is so much of a solution for so many of us alive today who don't quite feel that life has given us what we deserve or what it's meant to give us. So village is a passion for me, and Sarah lives it in a way, listeners, that is that's really fortunate and beautiful. So I wanted to bring that to you today to share with those of you who would like to have a more village life, and that's it. So, Sarah, you live village in a way that is striking. It's a lifestyle that so many people would love to have. So I just want to start with, by asking you, you know, what is village? Can you give us a picture of what it looks like for you?
Sure. So a picture of what it looks like. There's so many different facets to that when you say village. So I'm going to try to paint a picture by starting from the practical and the logistical parts and then kind of see what comes from there. So for me personally, as you mentioned when you introduced me, Jessica, I live very close to my actual family. My parents live just a few blocks away. My sister and her partner live a few blocks beyond that with their 3-year-old son. And I also have an aunt who lives just a few houses down from me. So just having that extended family near, there is certainly a feeling of village and support in the day-to-day and the possibility to be spontaneous and really involved in each other's lives. To expand out from that, I have a very strong community of families. And that looks like anything from we've organized a co-op preschool together to swapping childcare to making meals when someone has a baby or is sick. Lots of very supportive things, both emotionally and socially. I would say that that's sure is though we all have that traditional, most of us live in our own homes. There is a feeling of togetherness and support that kind of weaves its way through my days.
And how far away, so you mentioned that your actual family lives nearby within a few blocks. Your friends, are they in the same town? Are they in different towns? How does that layout look?
I would say that most of the friends that I am very close contact with are in the same town as me. So anywhere from a 15 or 20 minute bike ride to, you know, we've got a few friends slightly out of town that we would have to make a little more effort to drive to.
Okay. And is there anyone out of town or out of the country that you feel like is part of your village?
Ha! Well,
tricky trick.
You are.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, part of the reason that you and I are having this call is because we have made an effort to maintain a level of village with one another, even though we're almost 3 hours away driving. That's actually been really eye-opening in my personal story, because for a lot of years I held the belief that I wasn't, quote, good at keeping in touch with people who were far away. And part of what I realized, even just thinking about having this conversation with you, that a lot of village is really about prioritizing relationship. And so when that becomes, you know, something at the forefront of the way that I live, then really village can extend out as far as we need it to.
Beautiful. Yeah. Oh, you just nailed something so strong for me. I'm going to say it again. A lot of village is really about prioritizing relationship, you said. And I think you just sort of unplugged a beautiful piece of it that, in a very succinct way that hasn't been done for me before. Yeah. So you mentioned the practical piece and the strong community of friends in town, some out of town. And yeah, I didn't take the time to say that in my intro of you because I could just say so much about you. But listeners, Sarah is one of my absolute best friends and a very, very, very strong ally in my path in life. So that's in the picture here. Thank you, Sarah, for sharing. So what are the benefits? When you think of the benefits of a village lifestyle, what does it give you? What does it give your children?
So let's see. I would say that there's so many things, but the first one coming to mind is it gives us time. And I am thinking about one girlfriend in particular who reminds me often that time is, our time is perhaps the most valuable thing we have. And in this culture, it seems so easy to not have enough of it because we're so busy with our work and our getting to and from and our doingness. And so one of the things that I notice about village is a spaciousness for myself, that there is there are these openings that happen when I look at my week and think, I would really like to have quiet time for myself this week, or I have this project that's bubbling up and how do I make it possible to do that within the context of getting my kids where they need to be, making sure that we have good food on the table, trying my best to have a house that doesn't just fall into chaos. So where do I carve out time? And I noticed that having many people around us make that particular anxiety, or they allow that particular anxiety to be lessened, because I can look and say, oh, I could ask my family, or I could ask my friends, or, oh yeah, you know, my daughter's been saying she wants to play with this friend. I'm going to add up sometime in the next few days. And just the possibility of creating time and space is definitely a big one.
Huge.
I would also say that one of the big benefits is a sense of security. I guess I say that, and what I mean when I say that is I feel really held by my family and community, and I know that that translates to my children. And that's maybe one of the most heartening and surprising parts about how our life has sort of embraced this idea of village, because I see my children very confident and assured that someone will be there for them. Yeah. If it's not me, that there is someone that they know and trust and love who will, you know, be not just available, but sharing in relationship with them, bringing it back to that they really see that because we reach out, we reciprocate, that they're, the modeling of relationship as a priority in our family is apparent to them.
I think of Lewin, your 3-year-old son. Is he 3?
4 now.
4 now. Okay. This little guy who, gosh, I mean, pretty much everyone who comes into contact with Lewin just falls right in love with him. He is so precious. And even living 180 miles from you, the time we've spent together has made Lewin kind of like me. He kind of knows me. He considers me part of his tribe. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because you're talking about your children feeling held. They know someone is there who'll not just be there for them, but will show them love and care for them. When I see Lewin and he, you know, we're walking in the sand on the beach and maybe it's kind of hot and I think, oh, do you want me to pick you up? I can just reach down and swoop and pick him right up. And he's like, oh, it's Tia Jess. And there's this feeling in your son's body, this feeling in his, you know, the energy about him that is, Tia Jess loves me. Tia Jess is going to help me. Of course I'm loved. Of course I'm going to get picked up. It's this expectation, almost like, this is could be a triggering word, I hope not, but like an entitlement to love. And my assertion is every human being is entitled to love. And your kids know it. That is a really fundamental difference. And I think the mothers who are listening to this conversation can probably relate to this in the sense that, gosh, don't we all just want our children to know that they're loved and to have that love? So what a beautiful, beautiful benefit. So time and just knowing that you're held. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
When we don't have a village lifestyle, Sarah, what do we lose?
Well, this might sound kind of extreme, but as a mother, one of the first words that pops in is our sanity. and I don't say that lightly. To extrapolate on that, I mean, it's a lot to hold. You know, our modern lives are so full. We are juggling so many balls at once. And when we don't have village, I I see how isolating that can be. Isolation can, and this expands to not just mothers, but anyone juggling, you know, so many things, the work and the care of the home and the care of ourselves and all the pieces. And without someone to lean into and to reflect with, and yeah, just that consistency of support. I think it's really easy to be overwhelmed and to live with a level of stress that maybe we just sort of, grow accustomed to and harden ourselves to a little bit. And then there's just a richness, I would say, that comes with a village. There's, you know, there's the time, there's the being held, but then there's also this ability to witness in a deep way the way others live life. And when we're able to witness all of the many ways that life manifests itself through the human expression, I feel like that really brings a richness to our existence. Yeah, so I guess I'm kind of getting a little philosophizing here, but I would say the thing that we lose without having a village is at a core level, a natural part of being human. I mean, I'm not saying this from any researched place, but it seems pretty apparent to me that humans are meant to live together. We are not isolated creatures. And if you look at history, you know, anything from indigenous cultures to massive civilizations, that all happened because of our togetherness, not because of our individuality.
Yeah. And it, you know, I think the way that you talk about, how did you put it? When we're able to witness the ways life manifests itself, it brings a richness to our existence. So I'm imagining, you know, last weekend we were at the beach together with the 40 friends, children, grown-ups, parents, non-parents. Well, I don't know if there were any non-parents there, but, and I noticed how, you know, this mom, I'll say, Andrea, that wasn't her name, but she does this thing with her kid this way. When her kid does this thing at the table, she responds in this way. And that's not the way that you respond. And it's okay. She does it that way. It's not unkind or unloving. It's just different from you. And you see her do that. And that's how she does that. And you respect her as a mom. And, you know, if she were to be violent with her child, you would probably be shocked. Or at least surprised, and B, you would probably step in to help out, because that's very uncommon for, you know, our friend group and for healthy parenting. But there's a way that when we get to see how other people do things and realize there is no one right way, that it gives us a sense of, ah, humanity, different colors, different sizes, different ways. And it is more natural. It is a peaceful way of living, instead of looking across the street at a house and you've never met the people and they do things this way and you just sit around and judge them. So I do hear about that.
Yeah, there's a piece of that I want to speak to, because I've talked a lot about it specifically with parents, but about how we notice, many of us, I'll just speak for myself, I notice that I am a better parent in the village. Meaning when I'm being witnessed in my parenting, I step up. I know that I'm modeling for not just my own children, but for others. And it's powerful. It's really powerful to recognize that is likely a product of our isolation, right? That when we're isolated in our little boxes and no one is witness, we can kind of let our worst selves come out in a way, in that, you know, we're the only one holding ourselves accountable. And so, for example, in the circle that I'm fortunate enough to be part of, here in Chico, we have about 10 different families, I would say. And our kids call each of the parents in those families by their first names. So let's use Andrea. If it was Andrea, they would call her Mama Andrea, and their children call me Mama Sarah. And there's something initially when that started, it just organically happened. I don't know if the children started it or, and initially it was just sort of this thing that made us giggle. And as the years have gone on, I realize how powerful that is, that they are recognizing this person holds the kind of concern, discipline, love, etc., that because this is my other mama. And so in that situation that you were just laying out, yeah, it gives us this permission to learn from each other, to support each other through our failings, to step in without being asked, you know, to say, oh, I see something unsafe happening. I see a child needs something. And it's really freeing in that way, and that it does create this ease, the village, coming back to the village part, creates this ease in caring for each other and just being together.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And when you know that there are people around who really care for your child or your children or for you, life is easier.
Mm-hmm.
You're not holding it all up by yourself, having to project manage everything all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So Sarah, do you have a story that you could share that highlights the beauty of a village lifestyle, the gifts of it, the health of it, a story that kind of shows something beautiful that can happen through living village?
Mm-hmm. Well, I probably have several. What I was just speaking to definitely comes up, that there has been this sense. So I have two children. My daughter is almost 9 and my son is just over 4. And since my daughter was born, this living village has sort of grown organically into the place it is now, where, you know, those of us, the people in my particular circle, we really name it and we really are so grateful for it on a regular basis. Even things like, I don't know how I could move out of this area, even though maybe there are things that aren't ideal, because this village is such a an anchoring piece to my life. And so there's just sort of that general picture. But a particular story, I'll just tell you about my morning. So I'm fortunate enough to live in a place where I can ride my bike many places. So my children and I got on our bikes and we rode into our city park, which, again, speaking of fortune, is a lovely Bidwell Park in Chico, is many acres of very natural feeling out in nature. So we ride our bike to the park and drop my youngest off at his co-op preschool, which I helped organize a few years ago. And yeah, so we're greeted by people that we know, people that my children know. We get the benefit of my kids in nature, with people he knows. Because we've created it co-op style, it costs us all less than a third what preschool in our area costs. Mm. And what that looks like is, we've hired a teacher, she's there every week, and one parent has to come be in charge with her once every 2 months. So we get a lot of spaciousness, but we also get the added benefit of being together and having this thing that we created that we are held accountable to. We don't just drop our kids off and pay money and leave. Although, of course, there are amazing programs that you can do that. So I'm saying that simple story. And when you talk about, like, highlights the gifts and health. Well, there's the gift of beauty would be, we've created this thing where our kids are in nature, on a regular basis. The gifts would be relationship and also the financial ease that it creates because we're coming together and doing this thing.
That's a big piece that comes through from you, that because you're actively co-creating in the relationships that you're in, mm-hmm. you benefit deeply from, in many ways, you're actively co-creating. And there's a lot of the beauty that you talk about is coming from that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when we think of, you live a certain kind of village, you live one of many, 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 many ways village could look, right? Sometimes mm-hmm. when I've thought of village and, I've led a group here in my town that has explored the idea of village and the way that it could look and what are the values of village, mm-hmm. We realize that a lot of people live in cities. People live in rural settings. People live in a lot of different settings that, that would lead to a different way that village could look. So could be that they live in the snow. Could be that they don't have family members nearby. Could be that they're part of a religious or spiritual community. So for people who live other ways, how else could it look? I realize it's kind of a vague question, but if we're thinking in ways that aren't your lifestyle, how else could village play out?
Mm-hmm. I think that ultimately, circling back around again to that idea that at the core of village is prioritizing relationship. Mm. And so just looking at what's in front of you and where can you cultivate relationship? And a big part of that that's coming up for me is coming from a place of, I guess selflessness is the best word, but like looking around, maybe it's in your apartment building, maybe it's, the parents at the school where your kids are, maybe it's in your workplace, and kind of doing our best to retrain that thinking that we get so strongly in this culture of, I gotta take care of myself first, and flipping that on its head a little bit and just asking the question, how could I help my neighbor, my coworker, that parent that I see struggling at the beginning of the day, et cetera. And just starting with that question, I think, Jessica, and then slowly starting to act. I think there isn't a particular way, of course, that village can happen. I think a big part of it is our mentality of how do we cultivate an attitude of living with and supporting rather than, to be honest, getting stuck in that rat race mentality of, I don't have time, I've got too much on my plate. And as I say that, I just want to point out that in my own mind, I'm thinking, gosh, sometimes I listen to interviews on podcasts, etc., and I think, yeah, but that person being interviewed has it all together, and I don't know how I'm going to attain that. And so I just want to insert in here that, I'm sitting in the little extra room of my house as we talk with a pile of laundry that has yet to be folded, and that my house doesn't always look great, and that, I'm just as human and yep. full of salt as anyone out there.
Yep.
So, but I would say that it does feel like I continue to cultivate in myself that feeling of how can I be of service to my community? And can I do that in a way that isn't because I'm reaching towards attaining something specific, but because I see the beauty and have witnessed, been witness to the beauty in what happens when we just put ourselves out there just a little bit more and say, you know, how can I make your world better? Mm-hmm. Because it can't help but come back around.
Yes. Yes. And often when we are in a place of feeling like we have nothing to give, I'm so taxed, I'm so empty, I'm overwhelmed, all these things, we're in a place of lack, right? We're in a place of scarcity. And maybe the truth is we actually just need to lay down and throw a pillow over our head and take an hour to nap or something. However, a lot of the time, what you're talking about, you know, by reaching out and creating stronger relations, that actually can fill us up in a way that is almost surprising. My daughter is emptying out a bag of Lego, in case you can hear that. They got home sooner than I planned. So, to reach out and build relationships, that's what you're saying. That's fundamental. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you live in the desert or if you live in the city. How can I help my neighbor? How can I help my coworker? The parent you see struggling at the beginning of the day. If you are a parent who's really struggling, who's got a child in a tantrum and then a baby who's nursing, and you're downtown and you're having a really hard time, and then somebody reaches out, and I do this regularly, reach out, like, how can I help? Do you need water? Do you need, I'll try to talk to the child sometimes. The look on that person's face is almost otherworldly. And I say that in a sense of it's like they're thinking, that mom is thinking, holy moly, here I was feeling so isolated, embarrassed, overwhelmed, like I couldn't give my children what they need. And you stepped in and helped out. It's almost shock, because we live so isolated in general, that person is just so fortunate. So I love how you put that, to put it into a question of actually, how can I strengthen a relationship? Not what exactly do I do if I live in this kind of environment? So again, back to the relationships. Some of our listeners, you know, Sarah, may be really drawn to this idea, this feeling of living village. I know I've heard a lot of people say, I really want to live that way. And then what happens for most people is they butt up against, but it's just not going to happen, or something like that, which I encourage people to kind of push through. But what are some small steps they can take to bring more village into their life? And I realize we may have already gone there with your relationship pointing, but is there anything else that comes up for you?
Well, I think there's a piece of vulnerability, perhaps, that, you know, building relationships isn't a simple thing. It doesn't just happen overnight. But what's popping into my head is the story of how two women in the circle that I live in met. And it was basically one of them had moved here from out of town with a 6 months old baby, didn't really know anyone. And she saw the other one in the park with a child, you know, relatively the same age. And she just went up and sat on the bench with her and said, hi, I see, you know, we're both in the park with our babies. What's your name? And so I guess there's a piece of, you know, it may not already be obvious where that village is going to come from. And just being open to putting yourself in new experiences, you know, opening up to a new person, and just seeing, like, kind of back to what you said, Jess, about living in the lack of, oh, I just don't have it, to shifting that to curiosity. Like, how might that show up for me? And what, you know, in what ways, big and small ways, can I kind of expand just enough that I come across these possibilities for connection and for creating village.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we take a risk when we do that, right? When we are vulnerable, we're risking, what if that person doesn't like me, who I sit next to on the bench? What if they think I'm uninteresting? What if I feel rejected? Mm-hmm. Right? And yeah. Guess what? And what I say to that is not, that doesn't matter. Get over it. No way. Just, that's human. That's human. Yeah. And not everyone likes me. That's for darn sure. And mm-hmm. guess what? I claim people all the time. And I know it's not a common thing people do. So I'm just going to mm-hmm. share this as a sort of invitation to listeners. You know, if you see somebody you're interested in, go claim them. Go say, hey, what's up? And start some small talk or deep talk mm-hmm. or whatever it feels like. If mm-hmm. they want to hang out with you, they will. They mm-hmm. might be so delighted that you reached out to them. And I've had this happen many times where people are like, oh my gosh, I thought you were cool and I wanted to hang out with you, but I never would have done what you did. And I'm like, oh cool. Well, I'm glad I did because now we're hanging out. Yeah. And it also has been the case where I've wanted to hang out with somebody and they don't want to. And mm-hmm. earlier on in life, I used to take that personally. Now it's just, okay.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
Maybe it pinches every once in a while, but each of you who is listening is worth it, you know, to go out and just chat with somebody. You know, this morning it was a man at the coffee shop I went to. We got into a 45-minute, we ended up having breakfast together. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, and as you're talking, I want to give voice to that can be exceptionally vulnerable for some people. And so in the day and age that we live in, I think we would be remiss without mentioning, like, you can also do this through social media. You know, you can, you know, I've been invited to particular groups on Facebook where I didn't know everyone there. And it was like, huh, that's either interesting and I'm going to, you know, engage more with that, or nope, I'm not interested. But people actually, you know, meet each other in person through starting there. So that is certainly a possibility, for especially people feeling, particularly isolated to use that form. Yes. And before I forget, I also want to mention this like really simple modern thing that I've adopted as far as, building and maintaining relationships, which is the loving text. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, when I have a friend, a family member, whoever pop in my head during the day, I make a point to send them a little, you know, quick, takes me less than 30 seconds. Like, gosh, I'm thinking about you and I love you. And this thing about you is awesome. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a, you know, I mean, I can just feel it in myself. Like if I were on the receiving end of that, like, gosh, that feels good. You know, someone took a moment to tell me something. And it's just kind of this way of like checking in and recognizing it's so easy for us to all be, too busy, isolated, etc. And that those little moments can, fill us up so much and really, you know, invigorate one another, I think.
Now you've really gotten into the Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers zone, which as you well know is my zone. Uh-huh. Just the basic expressions of love are so powerful. And you're right, with texting, it's so easy. And, you know, you can do it through social media. And a lot of people listening, that really actually may be the way to feel like you're taking first steps, because social media is of our time. It is, you know, and you may show up on a social media group and say some things and be supportive of people and have a positive impact. And you may not meet 10 of them, but the 11th person, one day you run into, and there's that relationship, you know, brought into quote unquote real life in the skin. So,
yeah.
You know, I've heard a lot of people express a desire to live more village, people with kids, people without kids. Lots of people who feel the call to a more natural, less isolated community lifestyle. What do you think, what's stopping people? What gets in the way of people creating a village life?
Gosh, that's a broad question.
Yes.
What's coming up for me is just, as I think about this idea as a whole, I think it's important for me to share with listeners that I didn't write this down on paper and go, you know, it'd be awesome as if I lived a few blocks from my parents and my sister was up the street. And then I had this amazing circle of parents once I, you know, had children, like that's how I want it to look. I didn't do any of that. And I have come to recognize the huge value and the huge place of fortune and privilege that I stand in. And I know that some of that, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here, but I know that some of that has come more easily to me because of my privilege, because I am white, I am middle class, I come from an intact family who, you know, actually like each other, want to spend time together. There's so many pieces of that that come from a place of immense privilege. So I didn't choose, for example, to live even in the same town as my family. That actually was the product of tragedy in our family. I have an older brother who took his life over 20 years ago now. And the shock and grief and confusion that ensued for myself, and I'm assuming the rest of my family, sort of slowly brought us back together without really conscious thought or effort on our part. It just became this organic, like we all eventually were in the same area and it felt good to be around one another. And I think maybe that was, I'm just thinking this through as I talk, I think maybe that was the first awareness of, oh, I'm choosing to prioritize relationship. And I'm starting with my family of origin because we've all had this deep hurt together and that feels like the right place to be. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sharing that back to the question of what gets in the way. Maybe some of it is just listening and willingness to veer off track from what we think is expected of us in this culture to what really feeds us and what really feels good. And for many of us, I think that includes strong relationships and connections. And that may not be with our family of origin. In fact, I know that it's not true for many people.
Yep. So, and it's interesting this morning with the man at the breakfast shop, you know, he was saying a lot of what you're saying, really, in his own way. But just you said, you know, maybe some of what gets in the way is listening and a willingness to veer off track from what we think is expected of us in this culture. We do get really distracted from listening to our truth. And mm-hmm. when we do listen to our truth, we're more honest. We're more authentic, and therefore we are actually more attractive altogether. I'm not talking about physical attractiveness. We're more attractive. We're more appealing to the people we're meant to be with because they can see us in our truth, not in something we're making up or trying to be. Mm-hmm. And you bring up, you know, grief and loss of your brother and that bringing your family together. You know, we're really not in control here. You didn't choose for your brother to go.
Right.
And his death brought you closer together because you were all grieving together. So it's almost like you're saying, you know, let life steer you and go with it, building relationships along the way. Build mm-hmm. the relationships wherever it shows up as an opportunity for you.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I do want to echo something you just said about, you know, maybe for a lot of people, it's not with their blood family, their, you know, birth mm-hmm. family that they create village with. And for me, it's not. You know, my mom is a close part of our village, I would say. Other than mm-hmm. that, it's not. And I've watched mm-hmm. you, you know, for listeners, just I think this is an important piece because we do compare a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we can sort of complain about what we lack that other people have. You know, I've watched you, I've told you this before, but you know, your family is tight. Your family is tight. I am not saying you get along all the time because you do not. And I have seen mm-hmm. you not get along, but you take care of each other. You show up for mm-hmm. each other. You deeply love each other. And that actually has been partially created by the grief you've been through and how you've mm-hmm. been in that grief together. It can bring mm-hmm. us closer for sure. But I encourage listeners to to let go of that. If that's not how your family looks, let go of that. It's okay. It's totally okay. Let it be what it is and feed it where it is, whether it's family or not. No, there's no one right way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, to piggyback on that, just, and kind of finish that thought about where do we, what was your question initially, Jess? How do we,
what gets in the way for people?
What gets in the way? And so I'm thinking of this story. One of my very dearest friends and now my daughter's very dearest friend is someone that I met when I was pregnant. In fact, I think you may have introduced us. So we didn't know each other all that well. We had our first babies together. We were drawn to each other. And she went back to work when her baby was, I want to say he was about a year old. And I had my own business and had more flexibility with my work schedule. And so I started watching her kiddo sometimes when she was at work. And it was sort of this interesting dance of like, we didn't know each other that well and what felt good to both of us. And she wanted to make sure the hours really worked out evenly so that if I had him for 4 or 5 hours, she was going to also take my kid for 4 or 5 hours. And what I realized through that is we had different needs because I didn't have to go to work in that set way, the way that she did. So I didn't need her to take my baby for 4 or 5 hours. I also had the grandparents up the street, so I had different childcare needs. And basically what I'm saying is we got to a place where what I said to her is, what would feel good to me is if when I asked you for something and you could do it, you said yes. And when you ask me for something and I could do it, I will also say yes. And that's the only agreement I needed. And so I guess that's kind of a long way of saying maybe we get in the way because we don't say yes enough, because we make up these stories about how it's not fair or it's not equal or I don't have enough time or whatever the story is. And we prevent ourselves from actually just, you know, saying, I want to support you in your life and I'm going to do that when I can. And one of the ways I'm going to do that is by also asking that of you. And if you say no, okay, no biggie, but that's part of cultivating that village for me is to say, you know, I expect you. And in fact, I desire that you ask, that you know that I'm here and that I want to help and that I know that you're going to allow me to lean in when I need to, whether that's a phone call because I'm going through something difficult or taking my kid or, you know, bringing me chicken soup because I got the flu, or it can look so many different ways.
Yes. And you've mentioned this before, the importance of asking for help. And in the West, we're taught, well, I don't really know where it is anymore, but largely in this day and age, we're taught not to ask for help. Just do it yourself.
Yeah.
If you need to get therapy, you're broken. If you need to ask for help, you're broken. When actually the more intelligent being will ask for help as much as that being needs it. There is self-worth in it. There's power in it. And I want to invite listeners, I'm just going to go bold straight to this because we're moving along here, but don't rob people of a chance to help you. Don't rob somebody of a chance to run an errand for you, to do something, to cook a meal for you, to hold your child if you need it. Do not pretend you are do all everything superhuman, because that doesn't exist. So asking for help is a powerful piece of village too.
Yeah, and within that I just want to say that I'm aware that probably because you and I are both mothers to young people that, you know, this conversation has been pretty heavy about parents.
Yes.
I just want to say that, like, it's, I just want to pull in anyone who's not a parent. You know, I'm thinking of my, in my, circle, a couple people come in, my brother and his girlfriend who don't have children and who are such an integral part of my community. And, that it goes both ways. Like they're so enriching to me and my family's life. And, my brother's girlfriend has Lyme's disease and comes with its own set of challenges. And, you know, I make an effort to reach out and check in about that. And anyway, I'm going on a tangent, but just wanting to pull people in and say Village isn't about just taking care of the children.
No, absolutely not. And thank you. Yeah. And, you know, to me, in a proper village, there are children, there are newborns, and there are elders who are going to die in a week. However, right. That doesn't mean that any one village has this number of children or your own right. or anything like that. No.
Right.
It looks as many ways as there are people. So just one more piece I want to check in on you, Sarah, with mm-hmm. you on, and that is, and you've mentioned a little bit earlier, you said sometimes you just think of somebody, and I'm imagining your mom at the moment, and you just shoot a quick text out. Gosh, mm-hmm. I love you. But, you know, in order to feed anything in life, it can be very helpful to express gratitude for it, mm-hmm. put our attention on it, and be grateful. Do the people in your village feel appreciated? Your mom, your dad, your sister, your friends, and how do you express gratitude to them?
That's a great question. You know, honestly, I think that's a place that I could get better at. People do feel appreciated for sure. I mentioned the loving text. I'm also I love the written word. So I love writing and sending cards and letters. And I will do that semi-regularly to people just to say, you know, you're awesome and I appreciate you. We also have a practice in my family and anyone that ever shares a meal with us of speaking out loud what we're grateful for before we have a meal. And so I feel like that's kind of infused into the little subculture that I live in, is just this real awareness of we have so much to be grateful for. Mm-hmm. And that includes each other. Absolutely. At the core level.
Yes. And the humility. I love the transparency in you to just say, mm-hmm. actually, I can get better at that. You are one of the most effusively affectionate people I know. I mean, your smile mm-hmm. is like a whole galaxy in itself. And your face lights up. It's just like, oh, she loves me so much. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing. And yeah, we live in a culture of, acknowledgement deprivation. We think if yeah. you need to be acknowledged, you're broken. That ain't true, people. It isn't just for babies and children. Adults need it too. So, mm-hmm. lovely, lovely that you can get better at it. And I look forward to receiving your next handwritten piece of mail. So, Sarah, I want to thank you so much for, taking the time to be with us today and for living Village in a way that people like me and the listeners and your friends can look at and go, gosh, that's really amazing how healthy and loved your children feel, how spacious you feel. Spacious? You're a mom of two young kids and you feel spacious? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's possible and you're doing it, and you don't do it with an I'm the best, I'm right hat on. You do it with humility and confidence, but just in a really beautiful way. Thank you for living this way and for sharing time with us today.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for asking to have the conversation. It's one of those things that, you know, I think we all could benefit from someone kind of spotlighting things about the way that we choose to live our life and really asking us to think about them more deeply.
Mm, yes. Wonderful. So for anybody, listeners, who would like to get in touch with Sarah currently, you can find her best on Facebook on her business website. And the business is called Sacred Beginnings. So just look up Sacred Beginnings on Facebook and Sarah Wells, and you will find her there. I also have a book suggestion, just one. It's been shared with me as sort of one of the best books out there on living in Village. And this is a little bit of a niche, but this one's a little more on the practical piece, but it's called Creating a Life Together, Practical Tools to Grow Eco-Villages and Intentional Communities. So, you know, maybe not everyone wants an eco part of their village, but a lot of people do. And I think that's a great book. So listeners, thank you so much for coming today, for listening. I hope that you took something that was valuable to you to feed the relationships in the village feel in your life. And coming back to it today, you know, please take this conversation and share it with somebody who maybe has a long commute, whose life feels dull, who, you know, feels dead at work and in the society we live in and could use a boost, some reminders for how to bring more lift into their lives, more depth, more connection. And these are monthly interviews. We do one of these every month, and they're all on our website, my blog at leaningintolight.com. You can go to the conversations page and find all of them there. And we're not on social media right now, so sign up for our newsletter, which comes out about once a month. I send that. And so grateful again to have you here. So we'll be with you next time. And for now, have a beautiful day.